Welcome to the Floor Specifier Podcast. This is Brett Cyphers, and I'm joined today by my co-host and fellow members of the Specifier Editorial Board. First, there's Jeff Littlejohn. He's with the National Stormwater Trust, On-Site Performance, and he's also a senior advisor at the Adams & Reese Law Firm. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Next, there's Patrick Gillespie. Patrick is the Editor-in-Chief of the Florida Specifier, as well as a Government Affairs Advisor with the Adams & Reese Law Firm. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Excellent. And as always, I'm joined by Ryan Matthews. Ryan is a government affairs expert and golf enthusiast with the Gray Robinson Law Firm. I'm a partner at Anfield Consulting, and I host another podcast called Water for Fighting, which is starting its fourth season this week as well. Gentlemen, it's great to be with you on a still rainy but nice afternoon in the capital city. Going to talk about the September-October issue of The Specifier. Patrick, as usual, the final product is very easy on the eyes. A lot to choose from, news-wise. What can you tell listeners about the overall tenor of this issue?
Thank you, Brett. Appreciate it. Thank you for being a faithful reader of The Specifier. So, you know, this edition, I think we've got sort of a mix of some of your the typical stuff we have in there, where we have agency projects talking about the type of work that's going on out there in Florida, generally focused on water quality improvement or water storage. So we've got a couple different articles that touch on that. And then we sort of dive into some of the more, you could call it mundane, but important kind of government type stuff. We've got an article on a new DEP rule and some DEP grants, which I think we'll talk about here in a little bit. And then some of the larger, interesting, bigger picture issues going on in Florida. So it's a little bit of a mix of some different things that are going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like that off season anyway, except for, you know, obviously it's hurricane season. Folks are campaigning politically, and so they're off doing those things. But, you know, behind the scenes, there's a bunch going on. And I think we have an article on how do you harden against hurricanes and things like that. So, I mean, it's tough, but I think you took what is really a quiet season and kind of made something of it. So it's looking good.
Yeah. Yeah. So we discussed a couple of these different topics. And like you said, we're still right in the midst of hurricane season. So we have no idea what's still left to come. We're actually getting into the busy part of the season. And as we record this, there's some activity out there. So we'll see what happens. But like you said, you alluded to, we've got some behind the scenes stuff going on around state government right now. It's everyone's favorite season, LBR season. Ryan, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the activity going on as we move deeper into the fall?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Brett and you, Patrick, both alluded to a little bit of a quiet time, which is a nice respite for those who are heavily involved in the legislative session. We have had primary season and elections are over, and now those running for office are moving to general elections in November. But obviously, executive agencies are busy at work preparing for the 2025 fiscal year. The various agencies enter through an LBR process, a legislative budget request process, that basically will outline the various entities' budget for the upcoming year. Those are heavily scrutinized, quite frankly, and quite a work product for each individual agency. As they put that together, then they would then work with the governor's office before the governor will come out with his proposed or recommended budget for the upcoming session. Obviously, the legislature has the ability to appropriate. The governor makes recommendations, and he does so 30 days prior to the start of a legislative session. So his recommended budget would be due to the legislature in February of 2025.
Yeah, but there's a lot of room between here and there. And so a lot of those behind the scenes activity going on, a lot of people take guesses as to when something makes it from an agency to the governor's office for that kind of evaluation. Are you hearing anything in terms of what that timeline looks like in terms of when people should shift their attention from one place to the other?
Yeah, I mean, I think, quite frankly, now is as good a time as any to be having conversations with individual agencies, not only on existing grant programs that may be included in those LBRs, but potentially new grant programs that could come about, and whether that's DMS, DEM, DOT, DEP, et cetera. Those are all conversations that you should be having on a year-round calendar basis with each individual agency, because not surprisingly, year over year, the needs and requirements from both an FTE standpoint and a dollar amount standpoint change for each individual agency. And so if you do have an interest in a particular grant or the creation of a new grant, those are conversations that need to be had first with the individual agency and then with the governor's office as well.
Yeah, and those are two different processes, right? So you have the LBR, which is, you know, the additions to the budget that they want to put in next year. And then you have these It's a long list, a giant slate of grant programs as well. Most of those, you know, I think if people heard probably our last episode, know that those have closed by now. But they open up, some of them are open kind of during the year. And so if people want to work on those kinds of projects, they can kind of, I mean, even though it's closed now, to go back in and start working on next year is probably the smart thing to do. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And I mean, those, you know, those decisions are inclusive. And what I mean by that is that, you know, not only do you need to advocate before the governor's office, but also the legislature, because if the legislature doesn't see merit in a new grant program, well, then they're not going to fund mm-hmm. that grant program in the individual agency budget. So there's no sort of one-stop shop there from an advocacy perspective. You really need to be knocking on all doors if you think you've got a good idea for either a new grant program or an existing grant program.
Yeah, and I think people maybe have the misimpression. I mean, it's good for us that people count on us to go work on those things for them. But you don't necessarily, if you're a local government, say you're a city manager, county administrator, commissioner even, that can work these items themselves directly with the agencies they want. They want that grant to go through or want to create that new grant program altogether, right?
That's right. And I mean, you know, we focus obviously in this media endeavor, whether it's the newspaper or the podcast, on environmental issues. But the example that I bring up is the water quality infrastructure or water quality improvement grant, excuse me. You know, historically, that was a wastewater grant that had about $100 million in it. It now has $200 million. But Brett, you made up a good point on a client call earlier this week. You know, there's over $2 billion in applications for that $200 million pot of money. And so you're really at more of a, maybe a disadvantage than you were in previous years, just because the pool of applicants has grown so large. And this legislature and this administration has proven that they're willing to fund environmental programs. The question becomes, to what end and how much? Because again, you know, all of these issues that we've talked about, whether it's emerging contaminants, water supply, et cetera, price tag on those are billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And so $200 million is great, but you know, can we step up even more so in 2025, 2026?
Yeah. And those are some of the those conversations that are taking place at this point. Jeff and I, in fact, were on a call just the other day with the One Water Commission talking about an upcoming summit, I believe October, I want to say the 10th, right? Yeah. And so, you know, talking about the, you know, items like that, which is how do you look at all of those things? And, you know, and as you said, we were talking through the, you know, the dollar signs that are involved in and the actual demand. It's like, and so where does that responsibility lie? Where do you find billions of dollars, you know, regardless of where it comes from, the state or local, you know, what have you? There's a lot of conversations to be had. And I guess this is the time of the year that, you know, people engage in that, which is good.
There are. And I mean, you have to think a little bit more globally. We tend to be obviously myopic in our application of our profession, which is heavily focused on environmental matters. But I mean, the same conversations are being had in the education space, in the healthcare space, right, et cetera. I mean, we're, you know, $117+ billion budget. So we're not the only ones who say, boy, it'd be great if we spent more money on it. So yeah, it's sort of a get in line type of activity.
Yeah, fair enough.
But Jeff, we've got a great article that I wanted to talk about, and we, you know, air quote, borrowed it for the paper. It was written by Susan Stevens and Felicia Kitzmiller from Stearns, Weaver & Miller. Love to have you talk a little bit about that article and see how you see the issue shaping up.
Well, sure. Happy to. So this paper, we've really covered the issue with respect to the vacature of the 404, the state 404 program since that issue first hit back in February. And over the summer, there's a little bit of activity occurring with some orders being granted by the judge over that case. And we wanted to continue to cover that topic. Now that the kind of the flurry of activity related to requests to have the vacature stayed and the appeal of that, all, you know, once all of that was settled, we're kind of now in the grind of the case, kind of working it through the federal process, the court process. So the activity over the summer, there was one good news for Florida. We did get an order from the judge granting an expedited briefing schedule. That should move the case up from potentially multiple years to maybe 1 year, you know. So it's not a win, but maybe a little bit faster review in the federal process. So not a tremendous amount happening now, but we wanted to continue to cover it. So in the meantime, the Corps of Engineers is still processing all of the 404 permits in Florida. Those of you who are faced with that permit review process are probably frustrated. I think the Corps of Engineers is probably frustrated. They were given more than 1,000, maybe 1,300 applications basically overnight by a federal decision, and they're struggling with that almost the same as the way Florida struggled when they got their applications from the Corps. So
at Christmas time.
No, that's right. At least the Corps didn't get it. They got it at spring break, not
there you go.
Yeah. So if you're struggling in that process, you're not alone. Seek counseling from others in your same boat. Maybe there's some hope in knowing that other people are suffering along with you.
I'm just enough of a conspiracy theorist, you know, to throw, you know, a couple things out there and see what sticks. And it may be an unfair question. I'm using my quote fingers, expedited process. That expedited process, I think, finishes its briefs in January. That's around the time that something else kind of huge at the federal level takes place and that a new president will take office. Is there any chance at all that, you know, a judge would make it intentionally punt it to let a new, whatever that administration is going to be, it's going to be new for them to make the decision on that sort of thing?
This whole conversation is in air quotes at this point now.
Yeah.
Brett, I have no idea. I mean, my hope for an expedited resolution of our debacle here with Florida losing its program, you know, my hope is either that somehow Congress can address this by statutorily returning the 404 program to Florida. There was a rider or an amendment added to, I think, a must-pass House budget resolution, some kind of thing like that. I'm not tracking it very closely, but you know, we don't know whether the Senate will pick it up. We don't know whether it'll stay in the package, and we don't know whether we'll make it through. But if Congress is able to solve it, either through a return of the program specifically, or even an amendment to the, you know, to the Clean Water Act, I mean, that would be a remarkable thing to ask for. But if that could be done to make it easier for states, including Florida, to have the program, that would be ideal. Every other path is a multi-year path in all likelihood, with appeals and everything
right
having to grind their way through.
Fair enough. I took my shot. All right. Since we're already into articles, but not necessarily conspiracy theories after this point, let's move on to some of our favorite pieces. And I will take the honors of going first. And I want to go with a blurb, one would have to call it almost, you know, 200 words maybe, in our Florida Notes section, which it seems short and kind of rote, but there's some really important stuff in there sometimes. And that's the reason why I'm choosing one about the Department of Environmental Protection doing its triennial review of water quality in Florida. And that's actually opening up revisions to Chapter 62.4, 62.302, and 62.303 of the Administrative Code. But essentially, when you read the words there, it says also all surface water quality standards in these chapters are under review and can be revised as part of that review every 3 years. This is kind of where the following the science is supposed to be happening in Florida, and a lot of things are involved there. And I hate the idea of a rule being developed and moving forward and these changes happening in the same way that maybe the statewide stormwater rule did, which is, you know, a few years ago that started. It was just ratified a few months ago. But people were looking, could have been more involved. I'm going to throw in some personal opinion there, paying a little more attention to what was going on, so not as many people might have been surprised, you know, as to what the parts of it were. I mean, whatever you feel about the final product being good or bad or otherwise, the idea is that you want to have people involved. And so I'm glad that we're at least planting a little flag, and I think we're probably guaranteed to show more. There was a workshop by the time folks out there hear this, but it's in the paper right now on the website that you go back and look. They probably have video recording of some sort that you can see. And so hopefully people avail themselves of those opportunities as well. I'll leave it at that. Patrick, you got a pick or two?
I do. So there were a couple that I thought were pretty interesting. You know, one of the things that I've kind of focused on the last year is bringing attention to the issues of cybersecurity when you're talking about, you know, water utilities and things like that. And so that's a topic that's of interest, and I think is probably, we're talking about funding, underfunded and probably not as sophisticated as it needs to be. But we had an interesting article on AI. So obviously there's varying kind of thoughts on artificial intelligence and how that can be applied, but kind of using an example out of Fort Myers and what they're working on to try to improve their processes and being more efficient. And then just talking generally about how AI can and is being applied to environmental processes and environmental science. I thought that was a really interesting read. If applied well and if programmed well, I think it can be very useful to making operations more efficient. Obviously, I think a lot of that front end work is really important. The other one that I thought was really interesting was an article from FDOT talking about wave attenuator with the Sunshine Skyway Bridge. And I think, you know, the interesting thing about that article is, you know, I think generally environmentalists kind of see DOT as paving over paradise, and that's probably unfair to some degree. But it seems like with the last couple articles that we've had from DOT, really showing that that agency is focused on how to be least disruptive, looking at ways to be a little more kind of inventive and innovative in how they're applying their projects. And so I thought it was just a cool look at how they're helping to cut back erosion and actually helping foster some environmental development as well.
Yeah, I've seen those WADs, they call them, up close and personal, and they're fascinating constructions. And because they make them, pour the concrete or whatever the material they're using, they place it out there. But they're not just like a standard wall that you put up against the waves. Like, they actually turn into kind of like these reefs almost, right, of sorts, where it's like mini habitat even. And so it is interesting that they're doing that and also showing more focus on that sort of thing.
Right. It's just a cool design that probably most people don't really realize why it's there or what it does. So yeah, it's kind of neat to bring that out to light. So,
all right, Jeff, did you have another one? I know I laid a lot on you there with the 404 discussion and some opinions about other things there. Do you have anything else you want to know?
I like that we were able to do a post Marco article. I already miss it. Can't wait till next year. Yeah. It was nice to see that. Thank you, Patrick, for doing that. I think that was a nice article. We appreciate that.
You're welcome.
How about I go, Brett?
Please do, sir. Thank you.
Man, I'll tell you, I really enjoyed the Kings Bay restoration article. Not surprisingly, for selfish reasons, I'll have to make it about myself. I was at DEP in 2015 when the project commenced, and I think it's just a nice, well-written timeline of a very successful restoration project when you talk about muck dredging, the replanting of eelgrass, and how that seagrass has thrived in the area and really brought back water quality for Kings Bay.
I was hoping to hear the words eelgrass at some point today, so I'm glad.
Bingo card.
Bingo. No, again, as in the interest of seeing everything at all times, I've also been out on that bay and on that river and seen some of that work, and it is really cool what they've accomplished out there.
It is, no, for sure. And since I've got the mic, probably move on to everybody's favorite segment and go over a few calendar items about what is forthcoming. First, we've got the 3rd annual Florida Resilience Conference being held at the Hyatt Regency Coconut Point in Bonita Springs. We talked to Pepper and Dave Rathke just a couple weeks ago, actually, on this podcast about that conference and the good work that they are doing. So it is commencing now, I believe. So head over if you're listening to this when it comes out. Immediately get to Bonita Springs and support the good work of Resiliency Florida and the Florida Shore and Beach Preservation Association. There's a wetlands workshop and the Florida Local Environmental Resource Agency's annual conference from September 17th to the 19th at the Pensacola Beach Hilton. And rounding out the month of September, we have my second favorite conference, the U.S. Poultry and Egg Association's Environmental Management Seminar, from September 19th to the 20th at the Hilton Sandestin Beach Golf Resort and Spa. That should be a doozy. If you want to know what's going on in October, you'll have to go to floridaspecifier.com.
Well, I think that about covers it. Thank you for listening to the Florida Specifier podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to hit subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review. If you don't like what you hear, as always, it is Ryan's fault, and you should definitely show up at his office unannounced, hoping to berate him in person.
Get in line.
Yeah. Or you can just subscribe to the Specifier online at floridaspecifier.com and read your environmental news and commentary the old-fashioned way. But do be sure to subscribe. It's easy, inexpensive, and offers a ton of ways to read, watch, listen, and learn at your fingertips. Your support is greatly appreciated.
Production of this podcast is by Carl Sorn and Dave Barfield at Lonely Fox Studios, and we want to thank Bagels and Biscuits for letting us use their music for the podcast. Join us next time as we delve into the issues, policy, and people that environmental professionals and policymakers want to know about. For Jeff Littlejohn, Ryan Matthews, and Patrick Gillespie, I'm Brett Cyphers, and we'll see you next time.